Have you ever gone to the dentist with an achy tooth and left with a root canal and a big bill? You might wonder why more of the cost wasn't covered by your dental insurance. Isn't that why you have coverage? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss how dental insurance works and how to make it work better for you, our Executive Director for the National Association of Dental Plans, Michael Adelberg, and CareQuest Institute for Oral Health Senior Director of Policy and Advocacy, Melissa Burrows. Welcome to the program to you both. Michael, explain how dental insurance works and how it's different from health insurance.
Sure, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it. So dental insurance is a benefit that most people receive through their employers. The employer makes a contribution and prescribes the type of coverage that the employer wants to provide at that level of contribution. And then the dental insurer creates a network of providers who accept the plan's reimbursement. And most plans also allow out of network so that an individual can see a dentist who is out of network. And then the plan makes a payment to that dentist, but the dentist is free to charge additional fees over and above what the plan may pay.
So it's more like a discount or a coupon, really?
Well, that depends. Certainly, if you're using it within the plan's provider network, then you are receiving the full benefit that the plan covers.
Okay. Michael, what are your tips for understanding a dental plan, just the annual maximums and what is and isn't covered?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so first of all, it's important to learn what your plan covers. And while most plans have an annual maximum at some level, there are plans that don't. It really does depend on what your employer chooses to purchase and provide. And so there are, for example, plans with no annual maximum on the market. Though it's also true, Lucy, as you note, that the majority of plans do have an annual maximum. In terms of what a consumer can do, learn your plan's coverage, learn the network. If you can work within that network, your coverage will be more generous if you're using a network provider. And you're also working with a provider then who works with that plan every day, understands how the plan works, also meets the plan's goals with respect to the quality of the services that the plan is providing. So definitely to maximize value, start by looking in network.
Melissa, one of the things that I think is confusing for a lot of people is that the term deductible is used differently in dental insurance than in other health insurance plans, isn't it?
Yeah, it does look different in dental insurance plans than it does on the health insurance side. And I think just the fact that dental insurance is structured differently than medical insurance is where a lot of the confusion comes from. You know, we have, to your point, this annual maximum that can limit what people get. You know, we've done some research on that at CareQuest Institute, and we see that about 1 in 8 adults with dental insurance reach or exceed their annual maximum benefit each year. And that's about 32 million people nationwide. And when that happens, most people either delay treatment or they're having to pay out of pocket for that care. So, you know, it just looks different than it does on the medical side. And that has implications for both people's understanding of their plan and their pocketbook as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, please go ahead, Michael.
Just an additional thought on Melissa's good comments. So for the consumers who do reach their annual maximum, it is worth noting that they continue to have access to the plan's negotiated or discounted rate over and above the annual max. So that is frequently about a 1/3 discount. So there is consumer protection over and above the annual maximum. It's also worth noting that about 40% of people who receive dental coverage through their employer, that plan has some type of rollover. So if you do not use your full benefit in a year. Some of that rolls over to create a higher annual maximum in year two. That's an option available to employers who want to make that available to their employees.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, and in terms of this use of the term deductible, I know with medical insurance, a lot of us think of, oh, I've hit my deductible, I've hit that annual maximum, now everything's going to get covered up to a certain point. And that's just not the way it works with dental insurance, right, Michael?
Dental insurance is a defined benefit, and it's, again, subject to what the employer purchases and what the employer is willing to spend. So there are employers who purchase plans with no annual max, and then the coverage continues. For plans with an annual max, yes, there are some consumers who reach that level, but those consumers then still have the discounted rate over and above that.
Okay. Melissa.
And I'll just chime in. And say, you know, I think to your point, you know, it is kind of the reverse of medical insurance. And while there is still some benefit, once you hit that deductible, you hit your annual max, it is different. Whereas in health insurance, that means, you know, the maximum of your benefits kicks in. Mike's point is, it's a defined contribution or defined benefit. So on medical side, it's a defined contribution. What you put in is what you put in, then your benefits kick in after a certain point. On the dental side, the way it's structured, in large part because of the incentives for employers, is it's defined what you get out of it, no matter kind of what you put in. It's looks a little different. So I think that those are terms that we often use in the insurance space about defined contributions or defined benefits that do just kind of show how it's kind of the opposite way that dental insurance can work in some ways.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Melissa, what are some of the procedures that dental insurance typically doesn't cover?
It's a great question, and this does vary significantly. So I would say the main thing that dental insurance does always cover, for the most part, is preventive services. And so those are things that we really would encourage all patients to take advantage of. You know, you really do want to try to avoid those bigger problems down the road, and both for your health and for, you know, financial reasons. Beyond that, you know, it really depends in terms of what extent to which a dental insurance plan will cover, you know, more basic or major procedures. Things like fillings, crowns, or root canals are typically covered partially. You know, there'll be things like implants or dentures that may or may not be covered at all. But it really varies by plan. And so people, to Mike's point, should really make sure to understand their plan and also really talk to their provider about costs up front. I think that's something that dental providers actually do a little bit of a better job of than medical providers, where you can say, if this is the course of treatment you're recommending, what is it going to cost me? And they'll usually run your insurance and tell you the cost much more directly than you might get on the medical side. And so that's something I would recommend people do, because what is covered and what isn't covered can vary so significantly.
We're talking about how dental insurance works and how to get it working for you. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Michael, how are pre-existing conditions handled in dental insurance? And why are pre-existing conditions often not covered?
So to Melissa's comment, and unfortunately something you're going to hear a number of times during this program, is it really does depend on the plan and how the employer chooses to structure the plan and stretch the employer's dollars. There can be waiting periods. And the waiting periods are, if there are waiting periods, the reason for waiting periods is to prevent what's in insurance parlance called adverse selection. The idea that a person or a small group of employees may delay coverage until the moment that they have a very expensive need, And then they pick up coverage at that moment. Now, obviously, then the coverage is very expensive for everyone. So when there are waiting periods, and sometimes there are and sometimes there aren't, then the waiting periods are to keep the product more affordable and prevent adverse selection. In terms of what is and is not covered, in addition to Melissa's very good comments, I'd note that when you have dental insurance through any major carrier, there's going to be an app that you can put onto your phone, and you can in real time find out what is and is not covered. Your dentist can find out in real time what is and is not covered. I've actually used the app chairside with my dentist to make selections with that provider in real time. And to Melissa's point, the dentist can and should, if it's a complex episode of services, should put together a pre-treatment estimate. And most of the time, the plan can generate the financial side of that pre-treatment estimate in terms of the expected costs within moments of receiving the request.
Wow. What's the name of that app?
So each of your dental plans will have its own app.
I see.
So if you're with Delta, it will be a Delta app. If you're with MetLife, it'll be a MetLife app, and et cetera, down the list of carriers.
Okay. Did you want to add anything? I didn't mean to cut you off there, Michael.
Oh, no, I appreciate it, Lucy. The other place you can visit, though, a very good consumer tool is Fair Health Consumer. And a consumer can type in the zip code in which they live, look up the dental procedure, and find out the average cost of that procedure if they are going out of network and looking at the undiscounted amount that a dentist would provide or the average in-network cost.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yes, I'm retired. I'm over 65, and I'm on Medicare. And so far, the discussion has been around plans provided by employers. And I would like to hear something about people that are retired and on Medicare. What kind of options are available? For example, I'm getting a bridge, and it's $6,000, which
is wow.
Yeah. So, I'd like to hear about where I should go to look for a good plan. I don't have a dental plan because I'm under the impression that there really aren't any good plans out there if you're not getting one from your employer.
That's a great question, Bill. Michael, do you have thoughts on that for Bill?
Sure, I'll take a shot. And Bill, thanks for your question. So, Bill, a couple of thoughts. One is, you're correct that original Medicare Part A and Part B does not cover routine dental services. It only covers a very narrow range of dental services that would be related to larger medical episodes of care. So there are options to pick up dental coverage as someone over 65. A couple places to look would be in your metropolitan area. There are going to be a number of Medicare Advantage plans that have dental coverage in them. You should look. They vary quite a bit from plan to plan. If you are not interested in the Medicare Advantage plan, there is a standalone senior-focused dental insurance market. If you work with a insurance agent who focuses on the senior community, I imagine that person can help you find those products. If not, the major dental plans in the Cincinnati area on their own websites will have their senior-focused individual products. Unfortunately, then you'd have to look them up sort of one by one, but they are out there.
Okay. Well, thanks for that.
And I'll just chime in to say, you know, Bill, your problem is an important one. The fact that Medicare continues not to cover dental services is a really big issue. And you're one of nearly 70 million people in the U.S. that don't have dental insurance. And, you know, there are options out there that I certainly encourage you to explore, but they don't necessarily work for everyone. And we know for a fact that lower income families are hit the hardest. They're more likely to have unmet dental needs and need for care that they may not be able to afford the additional premiums for dental services, particularly if a low-income person lives in a state where they may not qualify for Medicaid or Medicaid doesn't offer dental services for adults. So there's some really important public policy issues that are part of this as well, in addition to sort of plan offering, you know, challenges.
Well, Bill, thanks so much. Best of luck with that bridge. That's a big bill. I can certainly understand why you're not looking forward to that. We will continue our conversation after a short break and later in the program, how AI is changing healthcare. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about dental insurance, how it works, and how to make it work better for you. My guests are Executive Director for the National Association of Dental Plans, Michael Adelberg, and CareQuest Institute for Oral Health Senior Director of Policy and Advocacy, Melissa Burrows. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Melissa, earlier in the conversation, you talked about how dentists often do a pretty good job of talking to patients about what they'll owe after a procedure, calling an insurance company, figuring out what's covered, what's not. What, is it always smart to get a pre-treatment estimate? And how vigilant should patients be about getting all that information about what they'll owe up front, especially before an expensive procedure?
Yeah, so I would certainly encourage patients to be proactive and talk to your provider about costs up front and ask for that treatment estimate before moving forward with a treatment plan. That's, you know, always a good idea. And especially if you're getting more complex or higher dollar care, things you know will be more expensive, it would be certainly in your best interest to understand the details of that. You know, preventive care is going to be pretty standard. You don't need to necessarily ask about that up front, but most other things, it's worth having that conversation and understanding what your insurance will cover and what it won't and what kind of out-of-pocket costs you'll have as a result.
Yeah. Michael, even with pre-authorization, can the cost sometimes be higher than what you expected? I feel like I've run into that from time to time.
It can be if, because there is complexity to delivering of services. So if, let's say, a certain pre-treatment estimate is received and the estimate is different, and the dentist ultimately, when she or he gets into the mouth, sees something that's a little bit different, and then ultimately submits a different set of services than was in the pre-treatment estimate, then what the plan pays will be could be a little different. And if what the plan pays is different from the pre-treatment estimate, then the obligation on the patient can also be different. It does happen every so often, but it's not what commonly happens.
Melissa, do you recommend patients do kind of a cost-benefit analysis to really figure out if insurance is worth it for them, or whether it might make more sense for them to pay out of pocket without insurance?
Certainly, those are financial decisions that I think each person needs to make for themselves. I mean, we do know that people with dental insurance, the data shows they have better access to dental care and better ability to pay for it. But I can't speak to what specific options are available to a given person. And for some people in some places, you know, you may find yourself making those trade-offs around how you may be looking at dental coverage or thinking about paying for things like basic necessities. And that's a trade-off that people certainly should look at with eyes wide open and try to really understand the trade-offs. But if the trade-off means you're not getting dental care that you need, that's not a good decision, knowing that, you know, those are problems that can land you with much worse health outcomes or in an emergency room. You know, it's not the right answer to avoid getting dental care, but you do need to assess your options around dental coverage very thoroughly.
Do you want to add to that, Michael?
I think Melissa framed it well. People who have dental insurance go to the dentist more often, receive the care they need more often. A scenario to think about is if you use your dentist in the form of two checkups a year and have maybe one major procedure, let's say a crown, you're going to get the no cost sharing on those two checkups. So they'll be free for you after you pay for your dental insurance. You'll get the crown at, let's say, 50% coverage, though it could be higher than 50% coverage if you're seeing an in-network provider. So when it's all said and done, that plus maybe $30 a month for dental insurance, you might still pay $800 or $900 for that procedure. But if you had no coverage, paid for your two checkups out of pocket, paid for your crown without coverage, and then didn't pay for the dental insurance, you'd be out about $2,000. So there are a lot of scenarios where the coverage provided by the dental plan plus the negotiated rate discount provided by the dental plan make it a good option for many people much of the time. But to Melissa's point, every individual should assess individually.
Melissa, is having dental insurance usually more cost effective for families when you've got a lot of mouths you're looking after?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think it really depends on how things are structured and where you're getting your dental insurance. Kids' dental insurance can actually be handled a bit differently, particularly if you're purchasing insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplaces or if you get insurance through Medicaid. So I think there's a lot of complicating factors as to what, you know, family insurance can look like. But I do think, you know, kids in particular benefit from regular access to dental care. I mean, we all do, but I think, you know, growing up and having access to prevention in particular is so important that it is important for families to consider those trade-offs very carefully.
Yeah. It seems like the overwhelming message is dental insurance is good and worth the money. Do you think still, even with that, not enough people have access to dental insurance?
Absolutely. I mean, we have 70 million adults in the U.S. that don't have dental insurance. That's far more than don't have health insurance. And like we said, there's some public policy problems that play into that. Medicare doesn't cover dental insurance through its traditional program. Medicaid coverage for adults of dental insurance varies dramatically by state. Whether, you know, you can even get dental insurance through your employer, or whether you need to figure out a way to try to purchase it on your own plays a factor in whether people have dental insurance or not. So certainly we're looking at solutions that can help more people access dental insurance. And then we also know there's challenges that folks may face with the way dental insurance is structured. And so that's something that, you know, we all need to keep in mind from a policy level, but also for those of us that are more involved in plan design and what offerings are available to employers, or what offerings employers working with our employers so they are thinking about the payoff of more generous plans. I think those are all conversations that need to keep happening to make sure that this system works even better for everyone.
Well, I have been talking with Executive Director for the National Association of Dental Plans, Michael Adelberg, and CareQuest Institute for Oral Health Senior Director of Policy and Advocacy, Melissa Burrows. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation. Up next, how AI is changing the healthcare industry. This is Cincinnati Edition.